Good morning, church. I invite you to open your Bible to the book of Daniel. We're going to be in Daniel for the next couple of months, looking at some of the more important stories in this book. A number of years ago, a fellow by the name of Ernest Kurtz wrote what is considered to be the definitive history of AA. Some of you know AA, Alcoholics Anonymous. He calls his book, Not God. Because, Kurt says, the fundamental problem that alcoholics have is down deep, they refuse to acknowledge their own limitation, their own weaknesses, their own brokenness, their own finiteness. You know, basically being sinful. They tend to fall under the illusion that they are in control of everything, when the truth is they cannot even control their own lives. And so Kurtz writes, fundamental to the recovery process is that healing and the recovery of sanity starts with the basic fundamental realization, I am not God. How does that sound to you this morning? I am not God. I am not in control of my universe. Often, I am not even in control of my own values. I think I believe in one thing, and yet I do another. I have weakness. I have limitation. I need help from a power outside of myself. Far greater than myself. I am not God. Now, I probably don't have to tell you this morning that this idea, I am not God, this illusion is not limited to alcoholics or even to addictive behavior. Do you know what was behind the very first sin that was committed on planet Earth? The serpent said to the woman in the garden, when you eat this fruit, your eyes will be open and you will, what? Be like God. It was the first lie. It was the first temptation leading to the very first sin. You will be like God. Maybe you've heard it put another way. You'll be the master of your own universe. You'll be the captain of your own ship. You don't have to bend the knee. You don't have to submit to someone else's authority. You will be like God. And the sad thing is people have been falling for that one for a very, very long time. And this single lie spoken from the lips of Lucifer turned Satan is at the heart of all sin and all spiritual confusion. Now, in the recovery process, in AA and other types of healing programs, they always start with a clear reminder of spiritual sanity. The first thing that people say as they begin to share at any given meeting, do you know what they say? They say, my name is so-and-so, and what? I'm an alcoholic. That is in order to get really clear about who I am. I am not God. It's amazing how confused we get about this one single principle. The writer Anne Lamott puts it this way. I like this quote. The biggest difference between you and God is God doesn't think he's you. The failure to understand that you are not God can destroy your spiritual life. So today, we're going to begin this new series on the stories in the book of Daniel. And this morning, I'd like to take a look at one man who had to learn a very, very important lesson about this whole thing, I am not God. So I'd like to invite you to turn to Daniel chapter 2 and verse 1. It goes like this. In the second year of his reign, Nebuchadnezzar had dreams. His mind was troubled. He could not sleep. Now notice, it's just the second year of this king's reign. He's been king for just over a year. Assyria, which had been Babylon's chief enemy, had collapsed just a few years before this. So Nebuchadnezzar is absolute dictator of this vast empire with unchallenged authority over the known world. He has youth, he has strength, he has wealth, he has fame, he has power. Apparently, this king has absolutely everything he needs. By the world's standards, he should have been, well, the most secure person on the face of the earth. He is God to all the subjects in the kingdom. But as we find him here in this story, he's a king slash God who should have been the most secure person in the world, but he cannot get to sleep. He's tormented. He's a God with an intolerable case of insomnia. He's used to having everything he wants, but he finds himself in this place, in the text, troubled. You see, people who are under this illusion, I am not God, are always just one bad dream away, one bad night's sleep away from utter insecurity, because they have been building their house, as Jesus talks about, on the sand. So in the second year of his reign, he's a troubled man. He calls his advisors all together and he tells them about his troubles. Look at verse 4. Then the astrologers answered the king in Aramaic, "O king, live forever." So I want to ask you at this point, how many of you think his closest advisors were any good at reminding King Nebuchadnezzar that he was not God? Not so much. Let me give you a picture of Nebuchadnezzar's worldview. It was reinforced by those who were surrounding him, those closest to him. Nebuchadnezzar saw the world like this. This is me. This is the world. The world revolves around me. Nebuchadnezzar believes that he is in control of his life. He's in charge. The world revolves around him. And sadly, a lot of people, probably more than we could ever imagine, live under this same delusion. They have terms for this type of delusion. We call it Messiah complex or narcissism. That's Nebuchadnezzar. He asks his advisors what it is that he dreamed, because apparently he can't remember. What does it mean? And they reply that they just cannot help him. And he has a very strong response to their lack of help. We see it again in this I am God syndrome. People who study human development will tell us, they talk about frustration tolerance. They say that people who develop through the stages of life and have a maturity of character exhibit a high frustration tolerance. They tolerate frustration. They're able to exercise patience and tolerance and acceptance and delayed gratification. Immaturity, on the other hand, researchers tell us, is marked by a low level of frustration tolerance. Basically, I cannot stand it if I do not get my way with you. Look at verse 12. The wise men had told the king that they could not help him with this particular problem. Verse 12. This made the king so angry and so furious that he ordered the execution of all the wise men of Babylon. So let me ask you, how do you assess King Nebuchadnezzar's ability to tolerate frustration? Yeah. He goes about trying to assassinate those he had a disagreement with. That would be an indication of a low frustration tolerance. In fact, he loses it so badly he becomes paranoid. Look at verses 8 and 9. Then the king answered, "I am certain that you are trying to gain time because you realize that this is what I have firmly decided." Verse 9. "If you do not tell me the dream, there is just one penalty for you." I think we all know what that was. "You have conspired to tell me misleading and wicked things, hoping that the situation will change." You sense the paranoia in King Nebuchadnezzar? He buys into a conspiracy theory. He says to all these closest advisors around him, after making an impossible request, "I know what's going on. You're all in this plot together, aren't you?" One of my favorite stories is about President Lyndon B. Johnson. Some of you remember LBJ. LBJ had a cabinet meeting one day, and LBJ asked Bill Moyer, do you remember the name Bill Moyer? Bill Moyer was his press secretary, and he was also an ordained Southern Baptist preacher. He asked Bill Moyer to offer prayer. And Bill Moyer was there praying, but he was praying real quiet-like. Now, some of you remember LBJ was from Texas, and LBJ sometimes could get rather coarse and rather blunt and rather loud. And so LBJ interrupts him right in the middle of his prayer and says, "Speak up, Moyer! I can't hear you!" And Bill Moyer replies without missing a beat, "I wasn't talking to you." Patient acceptance of frustration in everyday life is absolutely crucial to the formation of our character. It serves as a regular reminder to you and I, you and I are not the center of our world. And you and I, here it is again, are not God. So on Monday morning, when you find yourself frustrated, and believe me, there's a very good chance at some point during this next week you're going to find yourself frustrated. Maybe when you're late to an appointment, or maybe you're trying to multitask while you drive around and you're drinking or eating and you spill something on your clothes. Or maybe a task is taking much longer than you anticipated. Instead of getting all frustrated, use this incident as a reminder. I am not God. The world does not revolve around me. See, the basic problem here in Daniel chapter 2 is that King Nebuchadnezzar believes that he is a god. The world revolves around him, and the results are he becomes very self-preoccupied. He becomes very self-absorbed. He's all about this as he sees the world. He's troubled in spirit. He's anxious. He feels a sense of inadequacy. He's not able to face the future. He can't get to sleep because he's fearful something bad's going to happen. Now, his advisors have a different kind of worldview. Let's take a look at it, verses 10 and 11. The astrologers answered the king, "There is not a man on this earth who can do what the king asks. No king, however great and mighty, has ever asked such a thing of any magician, any enchanter, any astrologer." Verse 11. "What the king asks is too difficult. No one can reveal it to the king except the gods. And the gods," what? "Do not live among men." It's a very important phrase. No one can reveal it to the king except the gods. And the gods do not live among us. See, this is the great issue. Does God live on the earth with men and women and children? Does he know about my life? Is the God of the universe concerned about me? Does he care about me? Or am I left to struggle on my own as best as I can? Here is how his advisors see the world. Here is me. I live on this earth. Up there is God. Now remember, these advisors were religious men. He's up in heaven. I try to contact him. I try to connect with deity. And there is this wall. There's this barrier between God and me. And so the idea is, I'm on my own. So when I have problems in my life, I have no one to turn to. No one can reveal it to the king except the gods. And they do not live among men and women and children. It's a funny thing. The reason this phrase struck me this week is because there's kind of an ouch factor to this term. Sadly, if I'm honest with you, sometimes I can live that way. I don't believe that. I believe something different. A problem enters into my life. I encounter a crisis. I experience a relational breakdown. And instead of going to the God who runs the universe, instead of surrendering myself completely to him, I try to take control of it. I attempt to manage it myself. I have a burden that I face, and instead of placing it at the feet of Jesus, I carry it alone. I have a particular agenda, and instead of fully submitting that agenda to the God that I serve, I take things into my own hands. And oddly enough, the result of this way of life, this worldview, ends up being the same as it is with Nebuchadnezzar. I attempt to be God. It ends up leading to self-preoccupation. All that I can see is how it impacts me. Because I have to solve everything on my own. I try to be God. And so for these advisors, there's no hope. They're going to die. But then along comes the prophet Daniel. And you know the story. Daniel goes to his small group. Do you remember his small group? Do you remember their names? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And what do? They turn to God in prayer. And Daniel is given the interpretation of the dream. And in verses 20 and forward, there is this magnificent hymn of praise to God who sees all things, knows all things, even those things that are in secret. Look at the text. This is verse 22. He reveals deep and hidden things. He knows what lies in darkness, and light dwells with him. I thank and praise you, God of my ancestors. You have given me wisdom and power. You have made known to me what we asked of you. You have made known to us the dream of the king. Now look at verse 24. Then Daniel went to Arioch, whom the king had appointed to execute the wise men of Babylon. And he said to Arioch, "Do not execute the wise men of Babylon. Take me to the king, and I will interpret the dream for him." Now notice something here. Daniel is the one who seeks Arioch out. Daniel is shown the interpretation of the dream. So Daniel goes and he initiates a conversation with the head henchman, Arioch. Now look at verse 25. Arioch took Daniel to the king at once and said, "I have found a man among the exiles from Judah who can tell the king what his dream is." Interesting, right? Arioch is engaging in what we commonly know of as spin control. Truth is, it was Daniel who sought Arioch out. Arioch had planned to kill the whole bunch of advisors. But because he's going to Nebuchadnezzar and he wants to look good, he says, "I have found a man." You know how we are as human beings. "It was really tough to do, King, oh King, but I made it happen. I found exactly the man that you need." Now contrast this typical human behavior with Daniel's utter humility. Look at verse 26 and 27. The king asked Daniel, who was also called Belteshazzar, "Are you able to tell me what I saw in my dream and interpret it?" Verse 27, Daniel replied, "No wise man, no enchanter, no magician or diviner can explain to the king the mystery that he is asked about." Daniel refuses to take credit for this. "I'm not that smart," he says. "My strength, my wisdom, it's not my own." Not only that, notice another detail in verse 36. He says, "This was the dream," and now what does he say? "We will interpret it to the king." Why do you think he says "we"? There's no doubt the writer intends for us to understand that Daniel here is including the members of his small group in the interpretation. You may remember that he gathered his small group together, his trusted friends, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, when all these challenges arose. And these young men were in prayer for Daniel as he rose to the challenge. I love this little detail. The Bible doesn't miss a trick, does it? He wants the members of his small group, his closest friends, in on the credit. One more detail. This is verse 49. He says, "Moreover, at Daniel's request, the king appointed," who? "Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, administrators over the province of Babylon, while Daniel himself remained at the royal court." I love this aspect of Daniel's heart. I passionately want a heart like Daniel, don't you? Because if I am not God, then I don't have to get all bent out of shape as to who gets credit in any given situation. I can just get rid of all that junk. Daniel is just amazing in this way. Daniel is so careful to give glory to God, to give credit to those around him. And I believe it's all about this issue that we've been discussing this morning. I am not God. What does Daniel say in verse 28? He says, "No wise man in the kingdom can tell you this dream, O king. But," what does he say? "There is a God in heaven." Isn't that amazing? It's amazing the character of this man, Daniel. So humble, so authentic, so fully surrendered to God. The God that he served so passionately. So here we have it. This amazing worldview of a godly man named Daniel. here is this earth, and here is my place on it. And I am just one of so many human beings on this planet. And in heaven is this awesome and great and holy God. An infinite God. A God so big that he is watching over this planet. A God so big that he is watching over our lives. A God that is so big that nothing is trouble for him. And he never has a problem falling to sleep on the job. He's never troubled by your anxious thoughts. He's never troubled by your bad dreams. And not only that, but this God whose kingdom will one day come to this earth, this awesome God, desires a personal, loving, intimate relationship with you and me. Amen? That is the God we serve. So here's the truth about you and me. Here's the truth. You and I are not God. I don't have to assert my needs. I don't have to make sure I get the credit. I don't have to attempt to control other people. God is fully capable of taking care of me and whatever problem I may have. God can handle it. And most likely, I cannot. I am not God, but I am God's child. There is a God in heaven, and he's not just up in heaven. God is right here, right now. Emmanuel, God is with us. He knows all about you and he cares so much. I'm not God. You are not God. But you and I are his friend. And I am never on my own. Never. That's the life that I am seeking to experience. And that's the life that I know God desires for you.